More than the clothes we wear, style is about the way we move through the world. On this episode of Beyond Style Matters, I talk with cosmetics queen Lise Wauthier. Vision, passion, and dogged determination are the keys to success for most entrepreneurs. But for a Canadian woman planting the seeds for her own cosmetics empire back in the 60s, you had to have those keys and then some. The challenges were daunting, but Quebec's Lise Wauthier didn't seem to mind. And after starting a beauty and charm school in the mid-60s, she went on to launch her own line of cosmetics in 1972. By 2013, when Lise stepped down as CEO, the company was doing over $90 million in sales annually. While her company was sold in 2016, Lise Wauthier continues to be extremely active, particularly as the head of her own foundation, which was set up to empower women. The foundation's Let's Start Up program prepares and educates women to become financially independent. Today, at 78, the philanthropic Lise Wauthier is a beacon of light and inspiration to women everywhere. Lise Wauthier, welcome to this episode of Beyond Style Matters. I'm thrilled to have you with me, at least virtually, and to see your gorgeous face. Just feel your positive, vibrant energy, something you're very famous for.
It's been such a long time, Jean. It's been like 5 years that we haven't been together or...
Yeah, communicated. And so much has gone on, I'm sure, in both our lives. Lots of changes, for sure. I was so excited to have you on this podcast, not just because of your great association now with TSC and the Lise Wauthier brand, which is a thrill because women coast to coast absolutely adore your products and everything that you and your brand stands for, but because you have so many motivational messages just in terms of the way you've led your life. You started with very humble beginnings. You grew up in Montreal, right in Montreal. Tell me what really fueled your dreams as a young girl. What was it that made you maybe fall in love with this world of style and fashion?
You know, in school, I was a very, very shy little girl. I had a very good grades, and my friends around me, you know, they would say, oh, you know, when you're the first of your class, the first of classes, they don't succeed in life. And this hurt me a lot because I wanted to succeed in life. So I was discussing with my grandfather, whom I love, and he said to me, don't worry. The only way you have is to prove them wrong. So this stayed with me all my life. Prove them wrong. Prove them that you will succeed. And along the years, along the way, bankers or retailers or whoever tried to make me understand that I would not succeed, I would think I'll prove them wrong. Mm. And this stayed all my life. If someone did not believe in me or in my project, it would encourage me so much to prove them wrong. I was encouraged by those who believed in me, but I was even more encouraged by those who didn't. And this was my secret, I think, all the way.
Actually, I can totally relate to that because I had a lot of naysayers over the years in my personal career. I remember when I first started in radio, oh, you'll never make it in radio. You're too theatrical. You know, your voice is irritating. And all those years, you know, I used to think to myself, I'm going to show them. I'm going to show them one day that I'm going to, you know, transcend their expectations.
You know, I was really impressed by what you did because I could never have done what you did. I didn't have the self-confidence that you had. I had another type of self-confidence, believing in my project and believing in me, but I would never have been able to travel the world like you did and meet all these great designers like you did. So this means that every person has something that she can achieve and other things that she could not achieve.
Well, I know, because for me, I look at you and I think, oh, I never could have achieved that. I had confidence maybe in my personal communication abilities, in my ability to keep up my energy or to explore, but I never had the confidence to really start my own business,
go out there and play that game, because that's a ruthless arena, big business.
Every person has a strength that belongs to her, to that person. And I recall a sentence of Mother Teresa who said, "I can do things you cannot do. You are doing things I could not do, but together we can do a lot."
Every great conversation needs a pause, so this is a perfect time to talk to you about our sponsor, TSC, who, without their support, this podcast wouldn't be possible. Now, as you might know, I've covered the catwalks of Paris, Milan, New York, and London. And so why have I partnered with a retailer like TSC, today's shopping choice? Well, I believe that great fashion should be accessible to everyone. And TSC.ca is home to some wonderful Canadian brands and designers like Kim Newport Mimran, Brian Bailey, Kayla Kay, Ron White, and Hillary McMillan. And of course, TSC offers so much more than fashion. Discover quality beauty brands such as Lise Watcher. From lipstick to foundation, the Lise Watcher collection has you covered. For every Rouge Gourmand lipstick sold, the brand will donate $2 to support the Lise Watcher Foundation. Shop TSC.ca and let's all shop better together.
Community, I know, is very important to you. And a testament to that is what you just said, you know, how we have strength in numbers. And if we bond together and we can really make things happen, if we partner up with people, this is a wonderful thing that you've done. What I'm interested in first is you really didn't have the confidence to go out there, but you were a TV host at one time, were you not?
I plunged into something in the unknown. It was out of my comfort zone because I was very shy. My experience on TV taught me something so important, that I didn't have to have a facade, because if I had a facade, it was like not true. It was like, you know, false. So removing the facade, removing the timidity that was within me, accepting that I was not perfect, accepting that I would make mistakes, accepting that I would laugh sometimes with I should not have laughed, or I would cry when I shouldn't, but I still cry. I still cry a lot. But this taught me to be real, that I didn't have to make believe I was perfect. I didn't have to make believe that nothing was wrong with me. You know, I became a more human person because of the TV, I would say, the relationship I had with the cameraman. Mm-hmm. I started speaking to the cameraman instead of speaking to thousands of people. Yeah. And it changed the way I touched people, because I knew I would speak to one person at a time. And even when I did give speeches, you know, with 300, 400, 500 people, someone had told me, you have to look at the back of the room. I never did that. I always looked for eyes. I needed to speak to someone, because this is the only way I would be true and real.
Yet you decided to leave that behind. There was a point where you just didn't want to do that anymore.
I will tell you why. A producer once came to me and he said, "You know, Lise, it's thanks to me if you have this career." And I said, "It's thanks to you." I thought it was thanks to me, because I was working day and night, you know, to make things happen and make things perfect and bring the answers to all the questions that I was asked. So I said, "Never, no one will ever tell me it's thanks to him that I have success. No one will tell me this ever." And I quit. This was too much for me. I deserved to have the, I guess, it was my own thing. I was doing my TV shows. I was researching. I was calling my guests. I was rehearsing them. I was doing everything. I was almost a producer. If you in those days, you didn't think you were a producer, because that's I was, you know, I was just a host. But in reality, I was doing everything in the show. And when this person told me that, it hit me. And I said, no, whatever I will do in life, I will depend on myself. I will not be because of this or because of him or because of her or whatever. If I plunge, I do my own thing. I will be responsible for my own success or my own failure. But I never thought of failure. this gave me the little push I needed.
We all could use a big push sometimes. It's very fascinating to me because that in itself tells me so much about you. This you're talking about having worked in television, doing that job, maybe what, in the late 60s? Like before you started your company, in the early
60s. 62, 63, till 68.
And that was a time when television was so glamorous. It was considered to be an ultra glamorous arena. Now it's kind of gritty and, you know, I mean, you know, we all love TV, but it's turned into something else. But back in those days, for you to have been hosting your own show in such a glamorous arena as television and to be able to say, you know what, I'm out of here.
I didn't realize that, you know, I was doing this because I really liked it. I enjoyed it. Like I'm a missionary, you know, I was asked questions. I was looking for the right answers to the right professionals. And I created, I think, a relationship with the women I was addressing myself to. And this relationship with the best, it gave me, I guess, the things I needed to start a company without money.
But it's so interesting, too, because it shows that you cared more about the connection with people than you did about the glamour of the business. You loved that world because it was a way for you to connect and impact with women and empower them.
Even then, I was very, very young, and I had I called a club of helping women one another. So in those days, in Quebec, when a young girl became pregnant, they had to hide her. They would not in little villages, little towns, they wouldn't want people to know that their daughter was pregnant. So I organized a kind of a club where women in Montreal, mothers, would take these young girls till they had their baby and they would work in the house. And I did that and I was very young. I was 23, 24 years old. And I did this. It was called Le Club de l'Entraide. And I had these opportunities for these young girls who were not welcomed into their village or their house to, I'm kind of a missionary, some kind of a missionary. That fulfills me to help women. You know, I help them feel good with themselves because I had my school, which was prior to my cosmetic company. And to tell these young girls and young women of all ages that they were capable, they had the power to do things. I had my own company. It was an institute, you know, of self-improving classes, you know, and how to behave in society and to be more, I would say, have more confidence in themselves when, you know, how to eat at the table properly and how to introduce yourself and how to walk, to sit and all these things. And I enjoyed that so much. And as of today, I still meet women who tell me, you know, Madame Moitié, I went to your classes in 1968, 70s and 72. And I still remember everything you taught us, you know, and this is, for me, this is something very, very special.
I sure wish there was an academy like that today. I don't know if there is. I haven't heard of such a thing, but especially now with social media. And how people need to be taught almost how to be on that platform. A school of your nature would be most welcome, I'm sure. You got into the cosmetics industry at a time when there were really, in Canada, there's nothing at all happening.
No, they were Americans or French.
What gave you the confidence or the intuition or maybe even the vision to go into that field at a time when no one else was doing it?
Yeah, it's funny because I was giving in my classes, you know, in this self-improving classes, I was giving makeup lessons with makeup artists. And I had to go into the different brands that were existing then. It was Revlon, Max Factor. There were many, mostly American, and there was French a little. And for me to get the foundation I wanted, I had to go into one brand. The lipstick, I had to go in another brand because I didn't want a lipstick that tasted the rose or flower. For another mascara, I would go in another brand. So I decided, I said, why don't I put on the market a brand where my criterias would be my own? My criterias would be the criterias of the women around me because this is what I like and this is what they like. And I decided that I would start a small company with my own criteria. So I looked for a chemist. I ordered the skincare and I went to see like 10 chemists, and only one said, I will make products with you and for you. And this gentleman, we had something very special together. We both studied ancient Greek, you know, the Greek alphabet, and we both spoke Spanish. So we had a very, very special communication where I would use the Greek letters, but pronounce it in Spanish. Only him and I could understand. So we started working. He taught me cosmetology, what aloe vera would do if I added this to this. And, you know, we started this way. And no one believed in it first, but I had I was giving my classes in Three Rivers, which is a community not far from Montreal. And one of the students, I call them students, said, Madame Moitié, if you need a marketing test at the university, we can do this free of charge for you to see how you would, you know, you're planning to have a cosmetic line. Mm-hmm. I can make a survey. I got the survey. It was a pure disaster. Nobody believed in a Canadian or Montreal-based cosmetic company. Nobody would buy a Lise Wetsy product. Nobody believed in this. So this was great. I would prove them wrong. I had the strength to start it just to prove them wrong. And it served me.
Isn't but that interesting? Ah. Yeah. So revolutionary at the time, too, especially now when we think of products in the cosmetics field that are just jam-packed with all these interesting, you know, organic ingredients, or what, and you were using something like aloe vera, you know, decades back. Yeah, yeah. You obviously had a great imagination and a great passion to push things forward.
I went beyond because my chemist, the chemist who helped me then, he sent me to Texas to meet with the owner of the aloe vera manufacturing, to have the purest aloe vera, because there were many kinds of aloe vera. Mm-hmm. There were 10% aloe vera, 20. I had the pure extract. So I went to Texas by myself. I left my baby home and to get the best quality aloe vera on the market. I only wanted the best all the time.
You know, of course, so many of us feel empowered and want to get out there and deserve to get out there and must get out there. Working women often have children and they're so often torn. But we have now more role models, I think, to inspire us. And we have more of a community that we can commiserate with. For you at the time, as a working mother who was out there in a man's world, because that was really a man's world for such a long time, how did you find the stamina and the strength within yourself to keep on going, to tear yourself away from your kid and go off into the world?
It was always hard for me, even to go to New York or to go. I remember I would take sometimes the helicopter from New Jersey to New York, Manhattan, and go on the Pan Am building. And I was so afraid because I had my baby home. You know, when you're a mother, you don't want to travel and risk it. But I was very, very lucky. I had a very, very good nanny for 11 years mm-hmm. when my children were young. And she was with me for 11 years. And she would care for the kids and the kids loved her. And
did you have a husband or a partner during those years?
Yes. He was also working in the company. There were hard years, very hard years for me till I went on my own. Going on my own relieved me of a lot of tension. I was destroying myself during this relationship. Mm-hmm. And I was very unsure of myself. And I was very, I understand women sometimes who get put down so much that they no longer believe in themselves. I understand them. I was there. But I came out of it when someone told me one day, Lise, I think you have to see a psychiatrist. I said, are you kidding me? Lise Wattier, I need a psychiatrist? No, I'm a strong woman. And after having this little card in my car for maybe 6 months, I decided to call. And I went. And for the first hour, this psychiatrist sat in front of me without saying a word. And he was just staring at me. I hated him. I said, who does he think he is? You know. He's not asking me questions. I'm not lying down on the couch, you know, like you're supposed to do. Finally, I said, I don't know why I'm here. And he said, you know why you're here. And at the end of a few words, he said, I know you don't want to be back next week, but you have to be back next week. He knew. He said, I know you don't want to come back, but you should. You have to come back. And this helped me tremendously. And I came out of a situation where I was really, you know, people were telling me, oh, we're so proud of you. And I thought I didn't deserve that. And that's why I can understand a lot of women who are going through problems like this. Mm-hmm. But I came out stronger.
The fact is that, you know, nowadays we're all, I think, a lot more sensitized to that idea of personal health and personal mental well-being is of paramount importance. Things that, you know, in the past we suppressed a little bit. You know, there was a stigma about going even to a shrink or going to getting that kind of help. Yet again, this is one of the many beautiful facets of you as a person, that you allowed yourself to be vulnerable and to share that vulnerability that you even spoke about earlier in the interview. And I think that's what resonates with women and all the women that, you know, that follow you and adore you and that you've inspired so much. So something that's really important, that connection.
Well, I understand women, and you have to understand women, their fragility, their les craintes. You know, at first it's insecurity vis-a-vis your own beauty, because every woman is insecure vis-a-vis her beauty. If I help them secure themselves, is you are a woman, you are unique. Your uniqueness makes you the most beautiful person you can be if you are good. Every woman has her own life, her own style, her own beauty. Her uniqueness makes a woman different and beautiful.
Mm. Talk to me a little bit about your philosophy on aging and the whole issue of ageism, which I still sadly think is pretty rampant in our society, because you're any kind of example of a woman who, you know, remains ageless. You know, you're beautiful, you know, but far beyond the physicality. You have kept yourself so relevant. You are still out there. I mean, you've retired from the company in terms of running it, but you run your foundation. I mean, you're so active. You're out there in the world.
I have a lot of energy. I have wrinkles. I live with them. I have an age. I live with it. I'm 78, and I think I'm 49, which makes it hard sometimes. I enjoy life. I have a happy life. Everybody's healthy around me, my family, my grandchildren. I am healthy. I thank God every day. I keep busy and I keep interested in a lot of things. You know, I love to travel. I did love to travel. Now it's a little more quiet, but I love new experiences. I eat all the food possible. Some people would say, oh, I don't eat this. I don't eat that. I love to experiment. I'm curious, and I love to be with people and to exchange. And this makes my life busy. I'm always looking for something different, something new.
I'm sure you'll find something else to do. You always have. You have just such a zest and such an incredible joie de vivre. And it's almost infectious just listening to you, Lise, for sure. And just talking a little bit about makeup. I mean, just to bring it right down to the value of that magical little palette sometimes of color that can transform us and lift us in such a simple way, really. I never forget, I went to, this is several years back, to Covenant House, which is a place in Toronto, a wonderful place for youths who don't have a home and don't have anywhere to go. And I saw there was one room in this big old house in downtown Toronto that we call Covenant House, that was the Lise Wachier room, a room that your foundation sponsored for, you know, troubled young girls to hang out in this fabulous room and play with makeup. There was all kinds of great, gorgeous makeup there. And I just walked in and I thought, this is, I mean, it's such a simple thing. Some might think it's a superficial thing.
Covenant House, you know, I've been supporting years before, because There was a nun, and she touched me so much with, I'm from Montreal, and I received this letter from Toronto. I don't know Covenant House at all, but my husband and I, we were touched by this letter, these letters from the nun. And we would send money every year, you know, every occasion to save a young person or whatever. And one day I said to my husband, let's go to Toronto and visit Covenant House. We've been supporting without knowing, just because of the letters of the nun. And this is when we decided we would have this room. The girls would have their own space to do things that they were not used to of doing. You know, this is how we came to Covenant House.
And what's your philosophy about makeup? Is, you know, there's a whole idea of, for some people, that less is more. And as we get older, you know, maybe we shouldn't be using as much. And I don't know if there are any rules in that.
No rules. I never liked rules. If the nuns told me when I was a little girl to always start with my right foot, I started with my left foot. I don't like when people say, oh, you wear white, but in August, you have to go black because white is no longer. You can wear white in January if you want to wear a white jean with a navy coat or whatever. I don't like rules for makeup. Some women look great with makeup at age 75. Mm-hmm. Some look terrible with makeup at 40 because they apply too much, so they don't apply it well. And some don't wear makeup and they're happy and they're glorious. So there are no rules unless you feel that you need it. Mm-hmm. I feel I need it. I wake up in the morning and I look at myself and I say, oh my God, do I need it? And it pleases me. I don't have to please anyone else. My husband loves me the way I am. But for me, I feel better as a person if I am done. You know, I can pull my hair, but I need to have a little mascara, my lipstick, blush, and my undercover, you know, for my circles under the eyes. I need it. I mean, it's not something that I can live without. I don't. I need it personally. So why not satisfy my need?
Yeah, I'm with you. I wear my black eyeliner. I have since the 60s every day of my life, even when I'm on vacation in the country.
Yes.
Lipstick is like my trademark. Gotta have your lips on. So I totally relate to what you're saying. It's funny how we can see these little things that just help move us forward in the world.
Yeah. And it's the way I am, but it doesn't mean it's the way you have to be or any other one. Mm-hmm. In life, you have to follow what your instinct or what your needs or what you like, and it doesn't hurt anyone. The foundation, which is my raison de vivre now, mm-hmm. is to help women become financially independent. Mm-hmm. A lot of women are depending on either a husband or on the government. And when you depend on someone, you're not a free person. Mm-hmm. And for me, to help women become financially independent is the only way to reach freedom. And to be free is very, very important. And we have a program with the foundation that is called Let's Start Up, in French, S'entreprendre. It's been out there now for 5 years, and we just we opened in Toronto in the YMCA. It's a program that lasts 18 weeks. It's free of charge, and every attendee gets a certificate from Concordia University. So imagine for the self-esteem how it can help. They have the process for these weeks either to become entrepreneur if they have a project, to go back to school with financial help, or to go back to work with a better tools and better equipped to go back to work. We started a group of 12 in Toronto.
Fantastic.
And up to now, we help 500 women. So this is why my job now is to get money, to have people who care about the issue of women being financially independent, because this is the only way they can really live with their family also. This is my raison de vivre now.
So you've done it in Montreal, in Toronto, and I guess the hope is one day perhaps be in major cities across the country.
I wish, but we're just starting now. It's been 5 years now in Quebec. We have helped more than 500 women. And in Toronto, we have a class now of 12, but it will grow. It will grow and it will help young women, but women of all ages. We have women in the 40s, 50s, and either they go back to school with a financial help, or they start a new business if they have a project. This is what I'm living for now. I'm helping those who need my help.
Well, thank you so much for giving us so much food for thought, really, and for fueling so many dreams, because your story is just a total inspiration, as you are, Lise Wachier. Thank you for being on this episode of Beyond Style Matters.
Thanks for listening. To see video versions of the podcasts, check out tse.ca/stylematters. You can watch Style Matters Thursday on TSC or on the tse.ca website. Till next time, I'm Jeannie Becker.